It is now time for the Crime Report. It's brought to you by the Suffolk Crime Stoppers. 1-800-220-TIPS, the number. All calls to be kept confidential and a monetary reward of up to $5,000 issued for information leading to an arrest. Joseph Jacqueline, retired NYPD sergeant, former commanding officer of the Bronx Cold Case Squad. He's a current adjunct professor at John Jay College and, of course, an author of the bestseller. It's called A Criminal Investigative Function, A Guide to New Investigators, third edition. And, of course, Joe, highly decorated member of the NYPD in his day, including the Department Medal of Valor, the aforementioned Joseph Jacqueline. We say a very good morning. Sarge, how are you?
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I am doing well, and I hope you are fully recovered as I am. Well, I'll tell you, we each had a couple of bouts, but it's good to be back and breathing healthy again. My goodness, tough season.
I hear you.
Terrible stuff. Joe, let's get to one of the big stories. There's a lot out there, but you've been following this this trial, as I know you have. I have. The McMorris trial continuing. Thomas Murphy, of course. Lots happening here. The individual who allegedly drove drunk into a group of Boy Scouts, killing 12-year-old Andrew McMorris. And a bit of a surprise the other day with four counts. It looks like will be dropped. That's going to happen Monday in all likelihood, Joe. But, you know, a little bit of a stain now on this case. Give me your assessment overall here.
Well, I mean, we can look at the positive on it too, right? So they dropped four charges, but he's still facing, the maximum sentence. So it's, I guess the prosecutors at this point feel that they have enough to, you know, to get him on. I mean, you never want to see, you know, things dropped in the middle of a trial, but this is a horrific case in all its aspects. I mean, the father had to testify, and I mean, it's just one of those things where you just have to just hope that the evidence and everything that was done sticks. I mean, this is what defense attorneys do, right? So they're trying to have the evidence thrown out of the blood alcohol content that was taken, you know, hours after it was still well above the legal limit. He had refused to take the breathalyzer test, but he still, you know, was considered drunk even hours later. So you could imagine how high that number really was, but you can't use that in court. You can't say, well, it would have been X, Y, and Z if he would have taken the breathalyzer test. And that's really what we're, you know, at the crux of the argument right now. You know, how drunk was he when he hit these kids? And, you know, it's in the hands of a jury. It's going to be in the hands of a jury soon. And I think that it's going to be a tight one. I don't think this is going to be one of those quick deliberations, Jay, unfortunately.
Joe, you and I have spoken before, you know, about prosecutorial mishandling, misconduct, whatever you want to call it here. But, you know, the technicality exists because of the exchange of information that was not provided. As, you know, you had a doctor from the Suffolk Medical Examiner's Office, you know, who could determine a blood alcohol level, you know, with a special mechanism in place. Notes not exchanged properly. Judge really hands-tied here, thus the four counts, and kind of put a little bit of a damper on this. But we talk about all the time about following procedure the proper way. Not done here, it seems.
Right. Well, I mean, we've seen Suffolk County have a problem with this in the past with a number of homicide investigations, too. So, you know, Tim Sweeney has taken over this, pretty much mess over here, and he's got a lot of issues to do, including training and everything else. And he also has, I think, evaluate some of the DAs that he has and see what happens in this thing. You know, if there's somebody who makes a big blunder. I mean, listen, everybody's entitled to make a mistake. You know, things happen. But we can't afford to have a mistake happen in a case like this. But, you know, I mean, we might not like what's going on, Jay, but this is what the process is. And you know what? It helps, protect people's rights, too, in certain aspects. So we might not like the outcome, but we have to respect the process.
Have to respect it without question. You feel bad because, you know, you get a sense that this guy was indeed inebriated at the time of the accident, thus killing a 12-year-old. You feel bad for the family of Andrew McMorris. You feel terrible after witnessing the testimony yesterday from the father who has had very little to say from behind the scenes, and bottled up somewhat, let loose on the stand yesterday with pure emotion. You feel terrible about all this, but you're right. You have to respect the process. Stephen Politi is doing his job. You only hope in the end that justice will come through. The man, if he was 0.13, to me, is still over the legal limit of 0.08, the technicality involved here regarding the 0.18 and those four counts that will probably be dropped. Still 12 counts could be against Thomas Murphy. You hope justice prevails, though, in the end. That's the bottom line here. If you have a mistrial, if you have a verdict, if you have to go around again, you hope justice is done here for the sake of this family.
Right, and that's basically what you're dealing with in this respect. I think the father's testimony was, extremely moving. I mean, even when you just read it, you can feel the emotion in it, and the jury member, they hear this stuff. But the court of public opinion, what you and I think or what people think outside really doesn't matter. But the court of public opinion is much worse than you have to deal with inside of a courtroom. So we have to, like I said, hopefully the process continues and that the prosecutor builds their case beyond the reasonable doubt. And that's basically what you're looking for. You're looking for people to do their jobs and to do them well or the best of their ability. We don't have that time for mistakes, though. We want to mitigate some of those things, and we want to make sure that, like you said, justice is served.
Joe Jacklin on the Crime Report. The Tom Spoda trial, the thing I'm getting out of this, and we have Bruce Barkek, Joe, coming on after you. We're going to talk more about this. But two things in this case at this point in time. The fact, without question, the protection of James Burke, the former chief of the department at Suffolk County Police. Without question, the protection, Tom Spoda, amount of solidarity that they had together. The overall, whatever I can do to help, I will, with James Burke. They had a relationship. Let's put it that way. It was a protege. You go back way back in time when Burke was a teenager and he got in trouble. You also get a feeling that, and you knew you had a sense of this, that there was a very troubled mindset of James Burke. He just acted irrationally. Hard to believe this man led the department in any way. Don't forget, this was the county executive's pick at the time. Let's not forget that. But all in all, those are the two things I'm getting out of this whole thing at this point in time. As stellar a career as Tom Spoda has had, he protected this guy to no end, without question.
Well, I mean, listen, I thought it was bad, but after following the trial and reading all the transcripts and everything else, it was much worse than I ever thought. And I kind of like scratch my head because you figure that, at this day and age, we wouldn't have this kind of, this is something like you would have heard of, way back when in the 20s or 30s or whatever. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling about how Tom Spoda has gone, has just went to great lengths to protect the, and not only involved him, but everybody else in the office. I mean, it was almost like it was no big secret. I mean, they did try to do things behind closed doors. They were doing things in front of other district attorneys and questioning other district attorneys. I mean, one of the attorneys were actually called onto the stand yesterday. The Lieutenant Hickey was, had a couple of rough days over there in court. It's kind of frightening too, in a way, right? I mean, they run it almost like a crime family, and it's retaliation and not talking to people and going after people's careers and doing. I mean, it's just. I think I'm surprised that none of this stuff had leaked out years earlier, Jay. I mean, that's just something that I think. I mean, give credit to the people that were in the police department who kept these things to themselves in respect of, abuse. I'm not talking about crimes. I'm talking about just being, verbally abused or what have you. We have all kinds of things for that now with the EEO and the like. Nobody dropped a dime. So, I mean, it's just. It must have been under some terrible work conditions over there, too.
Imagine that, Joe. I mean, could you imagine reporting to this guy, knowing, wearing the uniform on a daily basis, knowing the overall word that you get out of this, ladies and gentlemen, is intimidation. That's what these individuals who were trying to do their job had sheer intimidation going on throughout their lives and their careers. Could you imagine trying to do your job in this type of capacity to protect the public, knowing what in the heck was going on behind the scenes, Joe?
No, they just had to go protect themselves and their families. I mean, people were talking about worry about them going after their families. I mean, this is, like I said, this is something you would read in a mafia book or something. I mean, it's absolute insanity what was going on. I mean, I had a lot of respect for Tom Spoda. I thought, like you said, he had a stellar career. But you know what? After hearing what was going on with this, Jay, I think they need to go back and start looking at some other things and see what's going on, because he just didn't start this. I mean, you just don't start this at the end of your career. I mean, unless you think he was just a crunky old man who just, you know, finally lost it, whatever. But, I mean, I don't think Leopards change their spots like that. You know, it's a shame. But this is how he's going to go down and remembered in Suffolk County.
Well, without question. Well, we're going to elaborate a little bit more when we have Bruce Barquette on in a couple of minutes. All right, Joe, let's get to one of the top stories of the day, and that's what happened in Freeport. You have a full-blown investigation happening right now. You have officers involved in a controversial arrest on Tuesday. You know, the biggest thing here, and I implore everybody, and I know a lot of people have watched this video. It's gone viral, obviously, of the seven police officers. One or two kicking him, one or two beating him, or punching him, I should say. But let's keep in mind in the perspective, because we've seen this movie time and time again. There are backstories, folks. Backstories, okay? Let's keep that in mind, Joe. You know better than anyone. This is an individual, Akbar Rogers, who was wanted on an outstanding warrant for an aggravated unlicensed operation of a vehicle, and in a separate alleged case of physical harassment, resisting arrest, led police on a high-speed chase, put people in danger and everything else. Now, I'm not saying at all that the police department involved in this arrest was completely right here, but let's take into account the full story. Sometimes, Joe, we lose sight of that, right?
Well, not only do we lose sight of that, but we also lose sight of the big picture. I mean, we only see the short clip of the video that has the officers, you know, punching things. One thing I can tell you from experience, Jay, when somebody doesn't want to be cuffed, it's nearly impossible to cuff them unless you have to use physical force. I mean, I've seen people 100 pounds take four or five cops to try to get cuffs on them. It is not something that's easy to do. And the question that will come down to is that, you know, the district attorney is going to look at, was the force excessive? And, you know, did they go too far? But they still, even using the force that they were using, they still couldn't get the cuffs on them. So, I look at this case, and, you know, policing never looks pretty. It always looks ugly. It's just that's just the nature of the beast, and it's going to come down to, we'll see, whatever. I don't know who who's going to be looking into this. I don't know if Madeline Singus gets this case. I don't know if, because I think Freeport's an incorporated village, I think. I don't know if they have their own. I know they have their own police department, so it's going to be interesting to see how that lands.
And then actually, it's interesting how you have the village mayor there, Robert Kennedy, his son was in that video as a cop. So, it's just a strange one. But yes, there is an investigation. Madeline Singus is on it. But let's keep in mind, these cops are still on the job. They have not been suspended of any, and they shouldn't be. Until this investigation reveals exactly what went on. Let's not forget here. This was a 100-mile-an-hour chase going on here. You put people in danger when that happens. Emotions are very high, when apprehension is in place. So let's kind of keep everything in perspective here. I know there's so much rush to judgment on this stuff, but we have to learn from past incidents in and around the country in this type of stuff. There are backstories, and we got to keep that in mind. That's key here. Yep. Joe Jackalone. Yep. Joe, the crime report. Joe, let's move to an extradition that took place regarding Michael Gaines. They got him from North Carolina, Joe. This was an individual in a murder. It took place in August of a man on the Shinnecock Reservation. He is back in Suffolk County, charged with breaking into a car. He was arraigned yesterday. Remember, that whole incident with Matunda Vanderpool, lived on the reservation at the time, wasn't a member, and he was killed mid-August. But all in all, they got their man here.
Yeah, no, this was they did a great job tracking this guy down and being able to bring him into the court. You have to go through a little bit of an extradition process, but that just generally takes a couple of days. I mean, people think, well, why don't you just, if you're the police, why don't you just pick him up and then bring him right back? You can't do that. That's kidnapping. You have to go to the local magistrate. We still call them magistrates, even from Old English. They bring him to the local magistrate, and they find out, you know, what the charges are, what's going on, if he's going to fight extradition, if he's not, and then you have to go through the process and the dance and that kind of thing, and then you throw him in the car and drive him back up here. So, yeah, it was great work by the police here.
No question about it. Hate crimes always kind of accentuate the emotions a little bit more. Yeah, two now within last week in Glen Cove. The thing that's most disturbing about swastikas present, it was at a Holocaust museum there, and that's rather troubling, and that means a pure investigation. Do we know anything more? I know they have some surveillance of four what appeared to be teenagers there, Joe.
Yeah, no, I mean, these things are disturbing. Hate crimes, unfortunately, throughout the country have been up. New York State has been suffering from them. New York City is really suffering from them. And now you're starting to see some of this out in the suburbs. But, yeah, these areas are heavily surveilled, and they have the video. And like I said, hopefully somebody who knows these kids can call the Crime Stoppers line and be able to get that information. There's, you know, nobody should tolerate hate in any community or any time or any day. And it's as simple as that.
Without question. I like what Nassau is doing there with police. They're going to work together with this Amazon Ring doorbell program. It's a little controversial, but hopefully they're going to solve some crimes here because of it. So, you know, it's about sharing video if a crime is committed in the neighborhood. We know about porch pirates and packages and thefts this time of the year. Of course, it is elevated beyond, but I happen to like when these programs are in place, maybe to deter some of these crimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why they have the cameras out there, right? So we have activists that are trying to fight this, but these are residential cameras. These are personally owned. If they want to share that video with the police, you know, you have no right to that. So I think that the activists' argument is going to fall flat on its face. We're seeing the resident surveillance cameras more and more. These Ring doorbells, I think, are a great deterrent for burglars specifically, because most burglars happen right through your front door. So I think that these things are cool. But you know what? I think I read an article this week that New York City reported 90,000 package thefts, you know, from people stealing stuff. So, I mean, I think we're going to start seeing categories showing up in crime stats about how many packages are getting stolen. It's absolutely insane that this is going on. So I'm all for it. I know there's people out there that are against it. But like I said, it's owned by residential people. They're owned by civilians. And if they want to give it over, then it's no issue as far as I'm concerned.
No doubt. A few minutes left. Joe Jackal on the Crime Report. You know, we talked about scams and everything else this time of the year. Now there's a fake bin scam. You know, listen, it's very easy. You know, you take old clothes and everything else. You want to make sure that it's on the up and up. But there's so many out there regarding fake bins and what you put in them. And you know, eventually what happens, folks, is when it's not on the up and up, they're sold for profit. You don't want that this time of the year. You got to look for that. Do the right thing. Report them without question, but be careful. These fake bins are out there, Joe.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is, I guess people figure this is the least thing that they're worried about. You see a bin, they want to do the right thing and hand it over. I say, well, then just for now until they can clean up this mess, just drop off the clothes at a Goodwill store. I mean, there are plenty of them on Long Island. You could do that so you don't know that it's going to where exactly where it's supposed to be going. Even though they resell them, they're using the money to help out those less fortunate in the community. So, you know, it's a great thing. Or St. Vincent de Paul or any other thing. Or your local church, you know, just to call up and ask and find out if they take clothes now on this whole thing. You can avoid the whole mess.
Good point. Go to the church. That's what I used to do. I just go right to the churches. Dermot Shea in place, right, as the commissioner of the NYPD. Already a couple of hires there. Do you know anything about him?
Yeah, sure. Rodney Harrison, who's now the chief of detectives. He and I were sergeants together back in the 7-3 precinct in Brownsville many years ago. And so I'm dating myself right now. So, Rodney's a great guy. He's a gentleman. He's very smart. He's able to. So he's going to make a great chief of detectives. And I mean, in the future, I think he'll be the next police commissioner. So I think that that's what they're grooming him for. And then I don't know the new chief of patrol, Pichardo, Fausto Pichardo. I don't know him. I don't know of him, so I don't really have anything I could say on that. But I think Rodney's a good pick. You know, and from what all accounts is that Dermot Shea is a very smart guy, and that, you know, he's very stat-oriented and this and that. But I think he's kind of facing a headwind here. You know, violent crime in New York City is up. Shootings are up. Murders up. You know, they keep on saying crime is down, but all the violence is up, felony assaults and sex crimes and all the other things that are going on. So I never trust stats when politicians use them, and everybody shouldn't. You should go and start looking at the stats and stuff yourself. Things are not as rosy as they said. I mean, listen, they're not off the charts, but there seems to be a turn, not for the better.
Troubling story midweek where you had an arrest, a school bus driver at his home. I think it was Huntington Station it was. And why? Felony charges now being issued. Sexually abusing a six-year-old child, also possessing child pornography. This Charles Tatone, who worked for the Huntington Coach Corps, he drives right in that Northport, East Northport Union Free School District. Very troubling there, Joe.
Yeah, no, any of these jobs that involves, you know, school and picking up kids and stuff like that, and you hear something like this, I think everyone just gasps. I mean, if you have a child that is getting on one of these buses and you hear a story like this, I think it just frightens the hell out of you, and it should. Yeah, this is, you know, one person out of all the, you know, the school bus drivers out there, you know, I get that. But, you know, one too many. And it's just when you're dealing with other people's children, you got to make sure you have those background checks done and make sure that you are, you know, if anything pops up, anything that it gets reported. You know, I don't know exactly if there was any signs about anything that's going on at this or any allegations in the past. It's just going to be interesting to see how the investigation unfolds.
No doubt. Tragic story regarding the PC Richard family. Husband backing out of the driveway. Hits the wife. Wife just walked the grandchild to the bus stop for school. Terrible story involving the Richard family here. It just seems to be a case of just not knowing your surroundings, Joe. But you hate to hear about this stuff, too.
No, and I think, you know, even at 79, it's not that old considered anymore for driving. I mean, people still... I mean, my father's in his 80s. He's still driving. He still has his faculties and things like that. You know, backup cameras, you know, these are the kind of questions that I want to know, like, how, you know, does the car have a backup camera? Does it have any of these things? So, unfortunately, Jay, we've seen children get run over and a couple other things and people who even weren't that old. So these things can happen. Just you have to use, you know, when you're out there, use your rearview mirrors and look around you and back out slowly at the garage and, you know, hopefully that this never happens again.
You know, with all the cameras now present in cars, you know, sometimes I'm kind of old school. I never had that until now that I'm driving. You can actually see who, you know, the rear as far as you're backing out. But it's tricky sometimes. All in all, double, triple check. Head like a swivel needs to be these days. Just know your surroundings. That's really the bottom line. And also, I'll end with this, and well done, where you had a police detective, crucial cog in the fight against MS-13, was awarded posthumously. William Maldonado, 31 years on the force in Suffolk, died of colon cancer last year. He received the Attorney General's Award from William Barr. Ceremony was in the nation's capital, but well done. We know how MS-13 and the fight goes on, and Maldonado was an instrumental piece of that.
Yep, and it's great that he was honored for that, and the family you know, has a little bit of that as a memory about how proud they should be of their husband and father, and it's just, you know, it's a sad story.
Doing it all, the Crime Report. Joseph, have a wonderful weekend, and glad to hear you are much, much better. We'll talk to you next week. How's that?
You got it. Take care, Jake.